Teach me your ways, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Also joining us in the studio today is Chris Holowaty, and we're here because it's the holiday season, and we wanted to talk about that thing that's near and dear to us during the holiday season, the important question that everybody's going to ask. Are you going to go home and see your family for the holidays?
No, not that!
It is a time of family relations, gathering around the tree with those people that you haven't seen all year, and probably for a good reason. But there you end up. I'm sure that there are listeners who have incredibly good, wholesome family relationships.
And hi to both of you.
Thank you for tuning in. And
now
you can leave for the rest of us.
For the rest of the 13 million people in Southern California.
Now, as for myself this holiday season, we were originally going to go out of town and spend time with family. And much of my family I get along with just fine. But I'm actually going to stay in town with friends and my church family, most of whom I am much more comfortable with than some of the people that I was going to spend the holidays with. And I don't know if your experiences are the same, but I think it's funny that the holidays seem to be the time to deal with familial uncomfortableness. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, for me, this is the first year that I will not be spending the holidays with my blood relatives, with my family, with my dad and my mom. I've been married for just over a year, and so this is the first time that for both Amy and I, we're going to have our own Christmas this year. And it took a little while for us to come to that conclusion and for us to gently break it to our respective family that, no, we will not be coming up to see you this year. We're going to stay down where we are and, like you, Brad, spend the time with our church family and with the people that we are actually living in community with. Part of the reason why this topic came up is obviously with the holidays coming up, but also now I'm turning 30. And during the majority of my 20s, one of the struggles that I've had to deal with is how to properly relate with my family. What is my role to be? I'm the oldest son. I was the first one to move out. And there's always been a very weird tension with how involved I am with my parents. And it's been a lot of struggle, really, especially in my early 20s, of what role was I to play with them. When they've been having marital difficulties, it was easy for me to get pulled into the discussions. It was easy for me to want to play the helper. I want to help solve this relationship that's been going on for longer than I've been alive, because in my early 20s, of course, I must have the wisdom that is ready to be dispensed and to fix my parents. There's a lot of awkwardness as far as feeling sometimes that I should be doing more. This is my family, and dealing with passages like in Ephesians, you know, children, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment given with a promise. When do I cease being a child? And that was really the big question. You know, does it stop when I move out? How long am I supposed to continue honoring them? And what does that mean? I'm not even, you know, I wasn't really sure. And so I'd like to throw that out there as we begin to talk about this topic. And I know many people have to wrestle with this issue of not just whether to go home for the holidays, but what is our role? And this is perhaps more geared toward people in their 20s, but how are we, what is a biblical model of how we're supposed to relate with the people who gave us birth?
As normal, Chris, you raise a number of issues. I think first that we need to approach in framing the questions and framing what family relationships are and from Christian perspectives, first we need to recognize that there is a tremendous degree of paradox present in the scriptural depiction of family roles. For example, you do mention honor your father and your mother. Yes, that's there. There's also leave your father and mother and cleave to your spouse. So now it's honor your spouse. But nobody bothered to go back and erase honor your father and mother when you write cleave to your spouse. Additionally to that, you have Christ saying things like you have to hate your father and mother. Now, we may place all kinds of caveats on that to qualify what hate means, but he still said hate in the same way that he said hate evil. Granted, there must be some sort of a qualification of that word, but he still says hate your parents in order to come to him. And he also demands that you leave, like for the disciples, he demands that you have to leave your spouses, families, lands, your goods. Peter says, we've given up all these for you, Lord. And he says, yeah, that's right. That's fine. But you get a whole bunch of other ones in this life and in the life to come with tribulations. So we have this situation where we have conflicted voices even within the voice of Scripture. One voice saying, come follow me, drop your nets, don't worry about providing for your family, don't worry about your family loyalties, follow me. Then you have another voice saying, well, worry about the loyalty to your spouse. Then you have another voice saying, continue to honor your family of origin. And we have to find a way of negotiating all of these, even though they are conflicting, because one of them has to have highest priority. One of them has to have highest value for loyalty. Additionally, and we can begin to dialogue on this, there is a tremendous span of culture that is represented in the Scriptures. You have everything from basically, you know, late Bronze Age to Roman Empire represented. You have everything from Palestinian semi-nomads to Chaldean city dwellers to even domesticated quasi-Egyptian to agrarian families and tribal leaders, a monarchical leadership there. Then you have the destruction of that, and you have the captivity, where there seems to be a tremendous disruption in the social order. There is a difficulty then of trying to describe what is a family. So for Abraham, family means Abraham the patriarch is the guy that the entire tribe follows, and he makes the decisions as political, social, and familial leader. Now, those separate out in later cultures. By the time they're in the kingdom, the leader of the family is not necessarily political, unless he's at a tribal level. Abraham is a military leader as well. I mean, he and his boys go take and fight kings. So it's a very, very difficult situation to say, what does that mean then in those days? Honor your father and mother means obey the patriarchal traditions and the tribal law. And if somebody is unwilling to do that, they're criminals, so take him outside the city and stone them. Or does it mean he won't clean up his room? Take him outside the city and stone him, you see? What is this?
Well, I guess part of the reason why it's kind of a more of a recent issue is there is such an emphasis on the role of the family in modern society. According to some, it would seem like the main reason why America is falling apart is that there is a lack of good, strong family support. And by family, we're talking about the nuclear family. We're talking about the mom, dad, and the kids. And this is touted as one of the primary problems, that this is so significant and so important to keeping a society together that if you don't have this, you know, it's almost like this sacred idea of the family, that if you corrupt this sacred idea, everything falls apart afterwards. You have screwed up kids. You have chaos in society. Your kids won't be smart enough or whatever.
Dogs, you know, and cats cohabiting.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you've heard some of the rhetoric, I mean, it really is very strong. You know, single parents, you know, how is a child going to grow up with just a mom, you know? And this is never going to work because you need to have both the mom and the dad there to properly raise a child. And I mean, there's a lot of weight put on this idea. And I think it's overrated because we fail to recognize the significance of community. And we fail to recognize the significance of being in a church that has all the role models you could look for. That even if there's a single parent, there are plenty of people around to help and to support that situation. I don't think it should be all left to the nuclear family. I think it should be seen more as like a clan in some ways.
That having been said, don't you think, though, that the ideal situation, though, for raising children would be mom and dad? It seems by design that's the way things...
By what design? I mean,
Well, that's how you end up getting one of those little critters in the first place.
But is it mom and dad, or is it mom and dad, and of course they have moms and dads, and that's how they got there in the first place.
Because the nuclear family used
because
to
nuclear
be...
nuclear family. And of course they have brothers and sisters and no birth control, and so there's also about 90 cousins, and you're foraging for nuts and berries, and you need that because half the cousins are foraging and half of them are beating clothes against rocks. You know, so how do we do this thing? What implies what? Because if you have parents, that implies other parents. That also implies siblings. That also implies, therefore, cousins and aunts and uncles. And how many generations removed? And don't we all live in one big teepee? You see the difficulty then. It's where do we draw the line? And what typically happens is we adopt protectionistic modes that says, I have the right to cut myself off from authority speaking to my life, but my wife, my kids, we're going to be this little bubble. We're going to be this unit. We're going to be the nuclear family. And we have the right to accept or reject the cousins, the aunts, the uncles, the unsightly relatives who sit in lounge chairs, those kinds of things, okay? Whatever it might be. And it's a very arbitrary line being drawn. So can we throw off our parents and simultaneously expect our children to embrace us? These are some of the questions that come in, especially the Christian perspective throws a spin on it in that Christ said, you think I came to bring peace? Yeah, I always think that Jesus spoke with a Yiddish accent. You know? You think I came to bring peace? I came to bring a sword. I came to cut between mothers-in-laws and daughters-in-laws and sons and fathers and mothers and daughters and brothers and sisters. He says, I came to cut that. Now, we make a big deal of Jesus' other words. We say, well, you know, the gospel naturally separates in some... Yes. How can we simultaneously embrace the gospel which separates and claim that we focus on family values as the highest value?
And never mind the way that Christ seems to treat his own mother.
Oh, he's very rude to her.
In several occasions, whether it's at the wedding of Cana, where it's like, you know, mother, what are you doing? Don't quit meddling.
Woman, he calls her woman.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah, it's just distancing himself. And then later on, when, is it that they wanted to take him home because they think he's crazy?
That's another thing. But when they're standing outside the door, he's preaching, and one of them says, your mother and your brothers are outside.
And he says, who is my mother?
Anyone who follows the word of God.
So, I mean, it seems like we need to perhaps define what a family is or reevaluate the nuclear family.
And also, don't forget that this is an ongoing generational sociological problem. I mean, Cicero complained of the decay of the family in Roman Empire. Okay, and oftentimes you'll hear him quoted by moderns saying, see, that's what brought down the Roman Empire. I would like to also say, see, it's been this way the whole time, and we just haven't recognized that this is nothing new. It's an ongoing dynamic of human reality, that we have kids. When they're little, they love us and obey us completely, and then they grow up and they become individuals, and we don't like that. And so we want to keep turning the clock backward to our own youths, just at that horizon point where we had all power and we were expanding into our lives and we had all power over our kids and they did exactly as we told them and we had our dreams of them turning out according to our ideations rather than them turning out as human beings who have choices.
Yeah, it's really, I think it's very hard. And not being a parent myself, it's easy for me to say this, but I imagine it must be very hard for a parent to really see themselves as a custodian as opposed to the shaper and molder of this child they brought into the world. I mean, there is that natural instinct to want to protect and to take care of and to guard and to make sure that everything works out for this kid. But man, there's so much garbage that gets thrown in with that, as opposed to seeing oneself as a steward, as someone who is given a season to take care of someone so that they can move on and live their life. I come from a family that's very much into the family, very much into, we all get together, we, you know, blood is thicker than anything else, and that's the whole emphasis. And I remember being very surprised talking to older folks in my church who had kids, and they would talk about how they couldn't wait for their kids to turn 18 so they could move on, get out of the house so that these older folks could stay with their wife, you know, whatever, that they could have what they had 30 years ago again. And they couldn't wait for their kids to move out. And not that they hated their kids, it was just a thing of, if I'm going to be a, quote, successful parent, I want to see my kid stand on his own 2 feet and move on. You know, my family was very different. I mean, I come from more a Latino family where nobody moves anywhere. You know, you grow up, you get married, you move next door. I mean, and there's all these different concepts of even modern day of what a family is.
And that's part of the difficulty. We live in definitely a multiplex society and one that has rapid change. I mean, the amount of sociological change that's taken place in this last century, the decentralization even of cities. We move from agrarian to urban and then back out again. Already we're moving in one or two generations. The amount of change and the number now of cultures represented simultaneously to persons growing up. So we have one depiction of what a family is, say, from a movie about the South. Right after that, another news brief on tribes in South America. And then you have something about Israeli kibbutzes, all these different ways. And these are inputs that we're receiving that we wouldn't have received at previous times without lots of media. So now there's a confusion who speaks authoritatively for the family, other than Jim Dobson. You see what I mean? That's why there is this movement to say focus on the family. It's like we want the right to define what the family is and then propagate that. And it is, in some sense, a stabilizing aspect of society because to have a canon for what a family is. But it's also seeking to have ultimate voice for the rest of culture. To say, we know what a family is, we will define what a family is, and then we will hand that off to you and you will follow our template. Not necessarily so, and especially to do so in the name of God, because God defines family many different ways. He defines family as the community of believers, as whoever follows the law, that's his family. You know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit is an incomplete family. You know, if we want to say there's this ultimate model, well, if we want to say God is a single parent, Father and Son, there's no mom there. We can't make overarching, transcendent kinds of statements about what is the ultimate model for human existence, sociologically or theologically.
So the question comes back to, how do I relate with my family? What is a proper relationship that I'm to have? Am I still in some ways under their authority? Do I need to live as though I feel like I owe them something, whether it's a debt of gratitude or whatever, or some kind of a moral sense of duty? What is my role to my parents?
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about the way that Jesus obliterates social institutions is that he does so and replaces them with very, very simple protocols for action. So he obliterates religion and says, live by conscience. But that conscience has to be very, very pure. You know, he says, don't worry about the law and the prophets. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself, which is not easier. It's harder, but it's simpler. And in the same way, when we approach our families, generally speaking, we want reliable canons or standards, rules, because we grow up with rules. See, our family set rules for us. Then we want to know, do I still live in the rules I grew up with, or do I live outside the rules I grew up with? And it's cold out there and it's safe in here and we have our established ways of doing family, but they make me feel like a child and resentful and all these kinds of things that happen every time we get in the presence of our parents. So
that was a mouthful.
Yeah, all in one sentence, right? No, really, I did take English comp. So we have that tension, and Jesus, in a sense, crushes all that and says, let's not deal with rules. How about this? Toward your family, live with grace, mercy, and humility while maintaining strong commitment to me. Love them as I have loved you. Does that mean that Christ does everything that we want? No. Does it mean that he does some of the things we want? Yes. How does it work? He operates as he's told from the Father to love us by speaking to us, acting with us, sometimes leaving us on our own, sometimes going and correcting us, whatever. But it's that we are to treat our families with the same grace, honor, and service that we treat all human beings, which is ultimate service to be done in the name and expression of Jesus Christ. Probably the best advice a pastor ever gave me was, treat your father like Jesus treats you. I'm like, ooh. You see? Sounds easy, very, very hard. And what ends up happening is we want to justify other modes of behavior by saying they're societal norms or their debts of expectation or whatever. But all we have to do is look at Jesus with things like the parable of the unforgiving servant. How does that impact a family? Parable of the unforgiving servant, where he's forgiven 1,000 talents, which would be 70 to 100,000 pounds of silver, and then he goes and grabs his fellow servant for a few 30 days' wages, and the king comes and takes back his debt and puts him in prison because he said, I forgive you so much, you won't forgive another. What does that mean? It means as parents, we say, okay, I think my kid owes me to be here for Thanksgiving. I gave all I ever asked, is it, you know, see, or not Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever holiday it might be. We tend to say there's obligation. obligation that my kids show up, obligation that my parents show up, obligation that my brother or sister or cousin, and we tend to use these levers on each other. And Jesus said, how in the world can you think that anyone owes you anything once you've been forgiven what you've been forgiven? I give you my life as God, and then you think somebody else owes you something. If we were to just throw out the idea of obligation, what would change in our family dynamics? And it's with this attitude that we have to re-enter our families as salt and light and to say, I don't have set rules, but I do have protocols.
There's definitely a sense of freedom in the way you describe that. But obviously, it's very difficult to live that out sometimes. But I think that's great to keep in mind, to recognize that our first obligation, if you want to call it that, is to Christ and to following him. And our obligation to each other is obviously going to be second to that. Part of the difficulty in this whole topic is that the fact is most people don't have nuclear families. I think the majority of people come from broken homes. I mean, the situation of if we're trying to repair the nuclear family, that's a pretty daunting task. If you're going to constantly be projecting this idea as the ultimate and everything else as, you know, gosh, oh, we wish you guys could have a better. Yeah, substandard or not as good. And I think that's where the church really needs to step in. And one of the things I like great about the church that I attend is that we have a large community of people from really messed up backgrounds. And I like to see myself as a 30-year-old man, as a married man, as an uncle to kids who maybe don't have a father figure in their life. I like to see myself as the child of some of the older people in our church. I enjoy those kinds of relationships, and I benefit from those relationships. And I don't see that as being substandard to the idea of some individual blood-related family that is compact and neat and, you know, the mom and dad, three kids and the dog thing. I see that as almost a richer way of living, to see my community and my church as my family as much as anything else. Because in a view and a perspective of eternity, that will be my family. I don't think my relationship with my earthly parents is going to be any more significant in heaven than my relationship with the people who I spend time with now. And if I'm going to be building those treasures in heaven, as Christ commands, I need to be pouring my life into the people I am with. I think it'd be good if the church as a whole could begin to grab a hold of that perspective, that we belong to each other. As much as you owe any kind of obligation to your physical family, you owe the same obligation to those who are around you. I think that is the message of Christ when he is communicating that, you know, who is my mother, who are my brothers, that we really do need to see each other as a family and as a community that needs to really love each other and grow together and band together and become for each other that which we need to be.
Yes, definitely. And I think what it's going to take to do that is to have the same tenacious mercy, patience, and forgiveness that it takes to go back to your family on Christmas, where you say, I don't have an option out of this family. I can't say, well, you know, I don't like the music that they play at Grandma's house on Easter. It's not my style of music, and I don't like the fashion of clothes that Grandma wears. Therefore, I'm going to go find a family that accommodates me and one that plays the kind of music that I like, that I feel is a much cooler family. You know, or I want a good, strong, traditional family. I'll go shop for one. No, you always have your crazy Aunt Ethel or whatever it is. You have the hodgepodge of people in your family, and you are with them. God has placed you with them, and the bonds are not necessarily of obligation, but of love. That if you wanted to, yes, you could cut yourself off because you have the ability to cut yourself off, and that's a tragedy. But what the Lord calls us to do is enter in to those relationships with humility, grace, and goodwill. And to be stuck in the matrix of them and have the patience to say, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Father, forgive me. I know not what I do. And see us through in this whole web mesh ball of things through to the end. And in the same way, I believe that that's what he calls us to as community, as church. That if we are going to claim we are family, we have to have the same bonds of inextricable loyalty even when they are uncomfortable. And so fulfill the law of Christ. Seeing our brothers in whatever situation and sisters and walking with them.
And not just picking and choosing which ones you like and when
What's my last name this week? Yeah. Well, actually, right now I'm shopping at about six families, and I'm thinking, I really like the way the Andersons dress, but I really like the house that, you know, the Newells have or whatever it might be. And going, I'm just looking for that optimum family that I can fit into, that has great taste, a lot of money, and is doing something with their community. It doesn't work that way.
So with that, may God's grace, mercy, and comfort be with you as you extend grace and mercy to your family this holiday season, or to your church family, or whoever it may be. We've been discussing family relations with Adam Ayers and Chris Holowaty. We'd like to thank you for tuning in and listening today.
One true thing in a world of illusion. One true word in a world of lies. One true hope. In all this confusion, give me that one true love. And one true heart never changes. One true heart never fails. One true life never fading. Give me that one true love. In a world of illusion, one true word in a world of lies, one true hope in all this confusion, give me that one true love, and one true heart never changes, one true heart.